Well, as we just heard on the news, President Obama is taking a look at jobs and how do we stimulate and get more jobs out there for people here in this country. A lot of people lost their positions and are having some tough time with personal finances. Even people who did not lose their jobs actually lost a lot of money in the market and for their retirement savings. And certainly it's a good reason to have Michael Collins visit with us today. He's an Extension Family Living Consumer Economics Specialist, assistant professor in the UW-Madison School of Human Ecology. He also has a blog, and we'll talk about that blog as well. I believe it's Tough Times is sort of the key word in the blog, but we'll get some more about that as we visit with him. If you have some questions about managing your personal finances, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Michael Collins, welcome. Nice to have you with us.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
This is pretty tough times. Have our consumers, though, seem to be pulling back a little bit, aren't they, from the a year or two ago?
Yeah, you know, consumers have had a tough couple of years. So if you feel like you've had a tough couple of years economically, you're in good company. Most of us feel that way. Partly what has happened is that the 2000s, particularly 2004, 5, 6, were boom times. And consumers were, incomes were, particularly for the high end, doing very well. And there was a lot of credit available. People were spending a lot of money. And we sort of hit the brakes quickly. And so everyone sort of come to a sudden change in that. I think there's some signs things are picking up. But I think for most people, it still feels pretty grim, especially compared to a few years ago.
So what are we finding out there? What are people doing?
Well, we are seeing people save more for the first time in a decade. Now, this has to be kept in perspective. In for a few years, 2004, 2005, we actually had a negative savings rate. People were spending more than they made. So the fact that they're saving anything is a good sign. But still, relative to other countries in Europe and elsewhere, we as a society don't save as much as other countries. So we have a ways to go on that. But people are definitely saving more. They aren't borrowing as much. Now, whether that's by choice or because they can't find a lender to give them a loan, I think is an open question.
Yeah.
But I do think we're finding people are cutting back on spending. I mean, you've heard retailers talk about it with the Christmas season this last weekend, and people are not quite spending the way they used to. So perhaps we're starting to see a sea change. It may be too early to tell.
Well, already callers online to visit with you. But again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Eugene and Viola, we'll turn to you. Thank you for calling. Hello.
Thanks for taking the call, Larry. Yeah, what I found at work for me, and I don't know how I got into it accidentally or somebody put me else onto it, and that's a notebook. Write it down. Write down your check and keep track of what you spend the end of week, every week, or every 2 weeks. Pull out the things that are unnecessary, like the cans of pop, the candy bars. And then I keep a notebook in the car to keep track of my gas mileage, where I go and what it costs me. And it does work. And then when I get paid once a month, Social Security, I pay myself first. I don't care if it's $25 or even $35 or $40 in a month's time. I make sure I get paid first. And I take the rest of it, and I account for it, is what I do. I make sure I'm accountable to every penny I spent. And I'm not tight or stingy either.
Yeah. I'll tell you, that's some of the best advice we could give. I'm glad you're the kickoff caller here. That's exactly what I tell my students in the personal finance class. The fact is, if you want to change any behavior, you write it down, whether it's weight loss or exercise. Keeping a log of it forces you to think about it more, and you tend to change your behavior. So writing it down is important, and pay yourself first. That couldn't be a better fundamental rule. If you take it off the top, you don't miss it. So, things like automatic payroll deduction and those kinds of things are a really good trick for people.
Yeah. Thanks, Gene. I appreciate it.
Great comment.
Thank you for calling. And again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Well, you've had some interesting experiences as a consumer researcher on the southwest side of Chicago, I think, wasn't it? for, what was it, NeighborWorks America?
Yeah, NeighborWorks America. There's an organization in Chicago, the Neighborhood Housing Services in Chicago, which has been around for a long time, several decades, particularly working in some of the lower-income neighborhoods there. It used to be their job was to get loans to people who otherwise weren't getting loans, and particularly in the 60s and 70s, there were a lot of banks that wouldn't make loans, and particularly the African-American neighborhoods in Chicago. And in the late 90s, 2000s, they found themselves in the opposite position. Everybody was trying to make loans in these neighborhoods. Yeah. And what they were more worried about was what kind of loans people were getting. And so they tried to be an alternative provider of loans to people in those communities. And, you know, the reason I got involved in those communities was that we saw foreclosures rising there as early as 2001. So in some ways, they were the canary in the coal mine of these troubled loans that were being made.
Well, maybe talk some more about that. But let's go to Janet in Spring Green. Janet, hi to you.
Hello. I'd like to share one way that I dealt with finances. My kids were little, and we didn't have much money to buy presents, and it was my dad's birthday. And his favorite food was pie. So I gave him a card with an IOU, one pie a week for 3 months. And he was delighted, and it was easy enough for me to do, but it got me through that. It was, of course, a minor crisis, but that's my story.
Oh,
that's great. You know, when people get in trouble, friends and family, and, you know, these are the kind of ways that we get through these kinds of things. So that's a great example.
Thank you very much for calling. I like that idea a lot. Well, what should people do? Let's say you really are down deep in trouble. Financial counselors, good places to go?
It can be. I get this question a lot about where do I go for financial counseling? Who do I trust? I think being very careful is the rule of the day on personal finance these days. A lot of those people who were hawking products at the boom are now trying to be there to get you out of trouble, and sometimes they're just as shady as they were before. So being really careful, checking out who it is you're talking to. There is a national association of credit counselors called the National Foundation for Consumer Credit, NFCC. That's a good designation to look for. Those are nonprofit agencies. Many of them will do initial consultations at no charge, and a lot of their services at no charge as well. For issues around foreclosures and mortgage loans, particularly if you're having trouble with a mortgage loan, there's a separate system set up through the Homeownership Preservation Foundation. It's the 888-995-HOPE number where you can call. And I don't want to mislead people. They're not going to give you counseling, but they'll help you start the process and figure out what next steps might be and how to find some reputable places to find help.
What are some of the options that are available for homeowners to kind of help them, those who are at risk of losing their homes through foreclosure?
I think the most important thing to remember if you find yourself in a position where you feel like you may not be able to make that next payment is that there are options. That none of them are easy or pretty, but they are our options. And so the worst thing to do is sit on your hands and just wait for the sheriff to come and take your house. So make sure you take some action. You start by calling your lender. I'll warn people that's probably not going to be a fun conversation. You'll wait on hold for a while. You'll probably get somebody who isn't very helpful, but you got to be persistent with that. And then you start to think about counselors and other legal advice that you can get through the process. The main options are if you have a temporary setback, lenders are usually very willing to come up with a repayment plan. So we'll lower your payments for some point in time, and then you make up for it later. If you have a more permanent setback, or if perhaps your mortgage is really large relative to the value of your house, there are options that lenders can pursue, including some that are subsidized by the federal government. Right now, we have a special program, Making Home Affordable, from the federal government that will subsidize some of these efforts. So there are options. It's a very difficult process. It's tedious. It requires an investment of time. And I think one thing to ask yourself is if you really want to keep that house. If you do, make the effort. But if you don't, think about trying to sell it and see if you can get out from under it.
How does before we go back to the phones, what form does the government assistance take on something like that?
We have a program that the industry calls HAMP. It's the Home Affordable Mortgage Program. And the HAMP program is designed to help people who are either in default, meaning they've missed some payments, or they're at imminent risk of default, meaning you've lost a job, you've got a position where you're not going to make the payments for a while. And the way the process works is you contact your lender. You fill out some paperwork. It's quite a bit of paperwork. It's like reapplying for a loan all over again. But if you qualify, if they show that your income can support a lower level of mortgage payment. They'll reduce your mortgage payment. And if you continue with that for 5 years, the federal government will actually pay off $5,000 of your loan balance, which is not nothing. And the lender and lender servicer can also receive several thousand dollars in incentives for doing that for you. So it's designed to be an alignment of interest so that lenders are more willing to make deals, to make modifications happen. We're not seeing a lot of loans coming through the system right now. So, again, I think this is a case where you got to be persistent with your lender. Make sure you dot every I and cross every T to get the paperwork done. But it can definitely help some people.
On the other hand, and before we go back to the phones, let's say there's somebody who's in pretty good financial shape or reasonably good financial shape and wants to buy a home, probably a good time to be out there. Huh?
Might be a very good time. Congress just extended a tax credit for home buyers, which used to be just for first-time home buyers. Now they've extended it to almost everybody. Prices are historically pretty low. The big hang-up now is credit. So, if before you start thinking about getting into the homeownership market, make sure you check your credit and you feel like you're going to be able to qualify for a loan, because it's a lot of work to go through the process and not be able to get financing.
Right. And pre-qualifying is
a really good idea.
Yeah. Let's go to Ron in Milwaukee. Ron, hello to you.
Yes, hello. I see these bell ringers out there for the Salvation Army asking for nickels, dimes, and quarters. And, it just pains me to think of all the money that we spent on the war and the war budgets, and now we're going to send more troops. So I just wonder, is the consumer problems that we're having in our budgets here at home really the effect of our throwing away just a lot of money overseas? And how do you see that affecting it?
Yeah. All right. Thank you for calling, Ron.
Yeah, it's a question people oftentimes think about is, how does my personal finances get entangled with how our government spends its money overall? And, it's a tough question. I think there's probably people better than I to answer that kind of question. But, certainly I think the thing that we want to be careful about as a society is just how much debt our government is in, when we ourselves as individuals are in a lot of debt as well. And if we start to see government to get debt get out of control, that has implications for interest rates. It makes all of our ability to borrow harder. So, in general, the level of government spending is important. I don't know whether it matters whether it's domestic spending or spending on defense or whatever else. But the more the government spends, the more pressure there is on, really all of us to have to repay that in the future and potentially higher interest rates. We're not saying any of that so far, but I think it's something for us as a society to worry about.
Thanks again, Ron, for calling. Michael Collins, our guest today, Extension Family Living Consumer Economics Specialist in the UW-Madison School of Human Ecology, talking with him about managing your personal finances in these tough economic times. You can join us with your question or maybe comment at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Personal finances on your mind, on our minds today with Michael Collins. And Nicole in Boulder Junction is up next with a question or comment. Nicole, hi.
Hi. I have a question. At night when I watch TV, I see advertisements for call us and consolidate your credit card debt. And I see the guy with the $30,000 in credit card debt, and I'm close to that guy. What do you think of those companies?
I would say with everything, try to be really careful. Whenever you see a company that's advertising really aggressively, you got to wonder where they get the money to do those kinds of advertisements. Mm-hmm. And that might be one red flag. Certainly when you have high levels of credit card debt and you're really struggling to repay those, you do have options. There are many attorneys who this is what they specialize in. There's different options you can pursue to reorganize your debt, including bankruptcy, but not just bankruptcy. There's other options, particularly in Wisconsin. We have other options to consider if you're facing some kind of hardship. There are, as I mentioned before, these nonprofit agencies which can actually provide a pretty similar function. Many of them will also charge fees as well, but you have some comfort in the fact that they're not trying to line their own pockets. It's at least a nonprofit organization.
What would be give us a name or two there for the?
Well, when you see organizations like Consumer Credit Counseling Services or any of the NFCC, the National Foundation of Consumer Credit Nonprofits, those are some that at least their staff have been certified and their organizations are certified. I'm not saying that there aren't occasionally people who have problems with those agencies as well. Checking things like the Better Business Bureau is a good place to start. Also in Wisconsin, you can check with the Department of Financial Institutions and there's listings and people, there's actually a phone number, I don't have it handy, but there's a phone number you can call at the state to try to check up on some providers and find out if there's been issues in the state.
All right.
Okay. Thanks. Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Nicole, for calling. Tammy in Glidden, we are on to you now. Hi, Tammy.
Well, hi, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just got a suggestion or something that I do. I hate shopping because I worked in malls forever. But when I, you know, like when you get your tax returns or all of a sudden you got, you know, like an extra $100 as a gift, I go shopping, you know, and you feel good, and it's like all of a sudden you grab whatever you can grab. And then just before I go to the checkout, I look at my cart. It's like, do I really need this? And I end up going back all the way around, returning things, and then I only end up spending like $20. I even do that in a grocery store, you know, where it's like it's abundance, but then you look at it, it's like, do I really need this right now? And that's how I take care of my financing. And that way I do have the extra money. If there was an emergency or, you know, cash was really low, I just don't indulge. Not even for Christmas, I don't. I look at what the kids need and maybe one thing, you know, from a dollar store or something, mm-hmm. a small little toy. But I always look at my cart and like, do I really need this right now?
Good points. Michael Collins, comment?
Yeah, I think, you know, in many ways we're seeing now, I think for a while there was a trend towards, you know, spend as much as you can, have the fanciest stuff you can. We're seeing now a real emphasis of people to be thrifty and actually competing with each other on who could be thriftier. I think that's all a good sign. You know, there's a number of things that you said that triggered some thoughts in me. You know, one is, you know, be really aware of your emotions. You know, when you go shopping and you feel like you have a windfall, say it's a $100 gift or a tax return or whatever, that's a challenging time to shop because you frankly have less control over yourself. So, you know, try to keep those emotions in check. It's just like you know better than to go grocery shopping at 5:30, right, when you're hungry before dinner. You know, so you want to try to keep that in check. The other thing is making a list. You know, it's similar to what you did. I mean, you sort of checked before you left the store.
And I never get anything that's not on my list.
Yeah,
that's right.
When I make my list, I write it down twice. Now, do I really need this? No, we can hold off. We don't need that. You know, I go through my groceries and see what do we absolutely need. So I got two little children, and it's a lot better than walking in and, you know, indulging yourself, but then you get home and it's like, okay, now I've got $20 in my pocket and I can't return these. Now what am I going to do for the rest of the week or rest of the month?
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah, I you know, other things people will do is sometimes they'll actually just use cash and not use credit as a way to reduce their spending, or even putting cash in envelopes. So having an envelope you write on it for groceries, an envelope you write on it for gas or whatever, you know, you just once that envelope's gone, that's it. So it gives you a check. I would say the one warning I would say to folks is we behave differently when we shop online. So if you're somebody who hit Black Monday the other day, mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you can be a little more less thrifty when you go online. And so that's something to be careful. Maybe make sure your credit card isn't in the same room as your computer. You know, try to control yourself that way.
I don't believe in credit cards.
There you go.
Too many people that go into debt, and mine is cash on the barrel.
Well, that's probably a pretty good way for a lot of people to operate, Tammy. And Michael, you probably agree with that.
Yeah, no, you know, certainly there's some people who are uncomfortable actually carrying physical cash. For them, the debit mm-hmm. card can be a great option because, you know, a debit card, once you spend it, it's out of your account immediately. So it's not a case where you can run up credit. So I do think, you know, avoiding the, you know, spending money in the future it would be a good idea. So try to just use what you have today.
We do use a credit card, but we get air miles on it, and our rule is we always pay the balance every month, so we never pay interest.
That's right. That's the best way to go.
Thanks, Tammy. I want to give some others a chance to join in. Appreciate your call. Doug and Sainer, we're on to you now. Hi, Doug.
How you doing, Larry?
Great.
I want to ask your guest, my wife and I had invested in some, what do they call, I-bonds a few years ago, and I'm wondering, they're based off of the inflationary rate, I believe. So is it a good idea to just keep hanging on to them, at this time, or, you know, what would he suggest doing with those? And then I got another comment. I just want to get his perspective. You know, I'm kind of tired of listening to the government say they're going to give a $6,500 tax credit if you go out and buy a new house. I'm going to give you an $8,000 credit if you never owned a house before. What about us guys and women that we're not in foreclosure? We're making our monthly house payment like we should, but we were smart enough to know what was going on when we signed the paperwork on our mortgage. And, how come we don't get a, you know, give us an extra $5,000 to write off at the end of the year on our taxes? You know, what's his view on that? I mean, I'm just kind of tired of the money going everywhere else.
All right. I'm sure you are not the only one who thinks that way, Doug. In fact, I'm positive of that. Michael Collins, what's your response?
Yeah, no, I hear this a lot. It's a great point. And, you know, I think right now it feels like if you've done everything right, you know, you've made the right decisions, you're a good financial steward, you know, you're actually being penalized. And the people and companies who made a lot of bad decisions are getting the bailouts. And it's a very valid complaint. That said, we have to, you know, look beyond ourselves, I guess, and look at the, you know, what the impacts on our communities. If you're in a neighborhood that has a lot more foreclosures, if you're in a neighborhood where nobody's buying or selling homes, I mean, that does have some impact on us as well. So I actually agree with you, but I'll just say there is a perspective out there that these are, you know, temporary measures that we need to take to kind of make sure that the economy is healthy for all of us. You know, frankly, some of this is politics, and, that's some of the dirty part of it. So your first question on the I bonds, the I series bonds they're U.S. Treasury bonds, and they've been launched in the last 10 years or so, and they're designed to do primarily one thing, and that's make sure that you don't lose the value of your money as inflation changes over time. What's happened is we have almost no inflation right now, so those bonds are returning almost nothing, and so, you know, the interest rate on those bonds fluctuates all the time. You know, whether you keep those or not, I think it's a question of what else you have invested in, and I think it's a bigger issue of what your overall portfolio is like. But I bonds are a very valuable tool for people because they are risk free. There's really no chance you're going to lose your money.
Yeah, you're not going to lose your money,
and you're always going to get whatever the inflation rate is. So you're sort of held constant.
Yeah. Thank you, Doug, for your call. Nancy in Grafton, on to you now. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
I really would like to know why stores can't give people who pay cash a discount, because it's got to cost them some money. They have to lose something on all the credit cards and all those things that all cost them money to use those facilities. And as far as Christmas presents, we have a very, very large family, and we used to exchange names. And this year we've decided that what we're going to do, instead of buying presents for each other, we are getting a family that doesn't have the wherewithal to provide gifts for Christmas this year. And so we're pulling our money together, and we're going to help a family who needs help, because there was a time when we also didn't have a lot of money to do this, and we're just giving back. So let me know about what you think about stores who give discounts to people who pay cash.
Great.
You know, there's a store in Madison. It's actually a sort of a specialty food store where we go occasionally, and I always pay cash there because they always give you, I forget what the percentage is. The problem probably is just the figuring it out every time, Michael. I don't know.
It's actually a question I've asked some merchants about, because whenever you use a credit card, there's something called a merchant fee that they pay, and you know, bigger retailers can get a better break than others. But I mean, there is a cost to them of using these, and they generally say two things. One is that we know you'll spend more money if you use your credit card, so you know we like you to use your credit card because you'll spend more. The other is that cash isn't necessarily free for them either. They have to, you know, physically maintain a cash drawer and then get it to the bank and count it and all that kind of thing. So either way, they have some cost. But I think in the end, it's just about it's easier for the clerk to just deal with one transaction than multiple ones.
And I like the Christmas idea, too.
I think that's a great model. You know, in an age where people are beginning to recognize thrift more and maybe not feel like they need to have the latest and greatest thing out there, you know, that can be probably one of the most fulfilling kind of Christmas gifts or Christmas experiences that you could have.
We our own family is involved. Well, this year we decided for a Christmas gift to made a gift to the Heifer Project. So we bought a goat, and that goat is going somewhere in the world, and it's going to help a family somewhere in the world get started with goats. So it's another kind of way to think about it too, is to think internationally as well, because there are some great Oxfam and some great organizations out there that really do a lot of good. Janet in Hartford, we're on to you now. Hi, Janet.
Good morning, Larry. There was a time in my life when I was strapped for money, and I would manage to pay bills, but there never seemed anything left over for entertainment, especially with my children. So I had to look for things that you could do for free. Particularly, we would go to the parks in the summer and take our lunch and, you know, eat outside. Or in the winter, we would go skating on flood lagoons or flooded areas. And I would check for discounts at museums. Sometimes they would offer that, or like a free day or something like that during certain times of the week. And community performances for like high school choirs and that sort of thing. All of that helped me through that time, and we would enjoy it and have fun things to do.
And those were a lot of fun, too, weren't they?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. They were. And I don't think my children especially noticed that I was doing it because it was...
Buddy was tight.
Didn't have extra money. But I have one more question, if I might ask.
Sure.
I also, like most people, the market has eliminated dividends, and so my monthly income is kind of back to a time when I'm feeling a little pinched. So I've thought about many things to do. I have a spare room, and I've wondered about, is it a good idea to try and rent that out? Is it a good time to sell my home? You know, how should I proceed with this? Should I change my investments so I'm assured of more income? I don't know. It's not risky investments to begin with.
Right.
How does a person proceed along those lines?
All right. Thank you, Janet. Comments, Michael?
Yeah, no, you're not alone. I think there's a lot of folks, especially folks on a fixed income or who rely on investment income, who are feeling pinched these days. I definitely don't feel like you're alone, or you somehow missed the boat, or you made the wrong decision. I mean, you're sort of in the same boat everyone else is. Certainly you could talk to an investment professional and see if there might be some options for you. But my guess is that there's just not a lot that's producing a lot of income right now. So it is a challenging time. Some of the strategies you talked about raising income, so things like taking in a boarder or some people are doing home businesses, those kinds of things. I think those are things people can think about, but, think about carefully. You know, when you have a boarder in your house, you have to really, oftentimes you have to deal with issues of collecting the rent and complaints about the property and those kinds of things. And so it's not a free money by any sense. Yeah. And selling the home, I think selling the home or buying a home, frankly, you should try to think about first and foremost as not a financial decision. If it's a place to live, it's a lifestyle, those are the kinds of reasons you might think about that. Certainly there are homes being sold today, especially, more affordable homes. It's not like you couldn't sell your home if you didn't want to, but do it first and foremost because it makes sense for lifestyle choices, not for financial reasons.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Janet, for your call. And Kathy in New Berlin, on to you now. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I had a couple questions for our guest while they're kind of related.
Sure.
I have a friend who had very good income and got in through a divorce and has children that are grown. But she got into trouble, I think, because she was competing with her husband for the children's attention and
right.
did a lot of impulse buying because of that and got into trouble with her mortgage. Took out a loan and ended up upside down, you know, on her mortgage and then the mortgage rates went up. But my question was, why are people like that being told to, while the problem is being worked out, don't make your mortgage payment? At least that's what she was told.
Yeah.
And ended up going months and months and months without making any payment.
Ouch.
And why are people, you know, to me, that's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I've heard it before. There's several sources that's come from, I think, when I've heard that kind of advice. One is, in some cases, particularly before the federal government started the Making Home Affordable program, the only time that a lender could modify a loan was if you were delinquent. So these would typically be the people you call at the call centers who, you know, this is their best attempt to help you as well. If you were delinquent, I could help you. So, you know, basically encouraging people to miss payments. And then, you know, there are also advisors out there of various quality who are encouraging people not to make their mortgage payments and to use that money to do something else and then take advantage of various programs. You know, those you have to be very careful about taking that advice, because if you do try to get a modification, you have to then go back and, as I said before, present an awful lot of paperwork to show what's happened, what your hardship is. And if you can't prove that, you can get yourself in even more trouble.
Yeah. Thank you, Kathy. Dwayne in Middleton, your turn. Hi, Dwayne.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to comment about the comment that was made earlier regarding a discount for cash versus using a credit card or a debit card.
Yes.
I know at one time when I was a retailer, and I'm not now, my agreement with the credit card company required that I not give a different price.
Wow.
I don't know if that's still the case or not, but it was at one time. Maybe somebody could give us an update on that.
That's an interesting point. And I know there's at least one company here, one store here in Madison that does this. Whatever card company, I think they have pretty much any credit card company. Michael, do you know anything?
I don't know. It's a good point, though. I hadn't heard that before.
Maybe somebody else knows. Thanks for bringing that up, Dwayne. We'll see what happens here. And some open lines at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Mark in Appleton. Mark, hello.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, you're like talking about the financial issues and everything now. And, you know, I'm an immigrant to this country. I came like 10 years ago and I started from scratch. And the people like struggling with jobs and everything, you know, that I think personally that jobs are everywhere. That, of course, you cannot pick up what you want, really, what you like, but you can start whatever and do whatever. And I'm out of high professional in my country, and I start here in a construction. And, you know, it was something that I never did, but it helped me to survive, and now I'm okay. I do what I want. So I think everyone can do this. And, you know, the second thing is, I recently applied for a mortgage, and it was, like, very difficult to get it, because for all this calculation, I missed like $200 a month, you know? My income was less by $200. I don't know how to explain this. I don't know how does it work. But also, I got a friend who knows a person who got a mortgage without problems. But this person got a financial support from the government, and the government was paying her or his rent. Somewhere, and I don't know how come it's possible this kind of person can get a mortgage.
All right, comments, Michael. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll mention quick on the sort of the job market, and it is true there are jobs out there. I think what a lot of people struggle with is that it's not what they're accustomed to,
right.
and that's there's a lifestyle adjustment here. You know, people on average are taking 6 or more months to find another job, and part of that the reason it takes so long is because they have to figure out what exactly they're willing to accept in terms of a step down. In terms of mortgage qualifications, you know, one important thing now is if you're going to the mortgage market right now, whether it's to refinance or to buy a new home, lenders are going to be much more careful about documenting your income, looking at your tax returns, looking at your credit report, and making sure that the percentage of your income that's going to be required to pay this mortgage is good enough to get you there. So they pay a lot of attention to those ratios. You know, the only government program I can think of that would be involved for a lot of people right now is the FHA, the Federal Housing Administration Insurance Program. And actually, that's a case where you pay them to get this insurance. So I'm not sure of a case where the government would be paying your mortgage for you. There are lots of through public housing agencies, you can get vouchers to help pay for your housing cost, your rent cost, if you're very low income or low income. And in some cases, some agencies will allow you to put that towards a down payment for a house or to help you buy a house. But those are very rare cases. So it's possible, but it seems pretty rare.
Pretty rare. Okay. Know. Thanks again, Mark. Abby and Trempolo, on to you now. Hi, Abby.
Hi there. I have a question regarding any advice that we could get. We bought a house about 5 years ago, lived in it for a couple years, and then my husband and I both took jobs in a community about an hour away. And when about 2 weeks after we put the house on the market, the mass flooding that happened in southeastern Minnesota occurred, and between that and the poor housing market, we've had our house on the market for about 2.5 years. we've been staying with family members closer to our job, but just recently we ended up renting a house and just found out that our renters are, we did get renters and ended up renting a house ourselves and just found out that our renters are moving out. So knowing that in the next couple of months we're going to be having to pay two sets of bills, a mortgage, a rent, is there anything, any advice for talking to our mortgage lender, it's a local bank, or you know, anything else that we can do, knowing that that's going to cause some financial issue before we get ourselves into trouble.
This is a complicated situation. So one thing to be very careful about is that you've got a home that you started out as an owner occupant on, and now you're a landlord on, and that makes that, from a lender's perspective, a much riskier home. So be careful when you talk to your lender, because they're going to be very concerned now that you sort of, you know, you got a loan under the idea that you live there and now you're renting it. So, you know, you say they're a community-based lender. I think that's an excellent thing for you because they might be more willing to try to work something out. You know, some options they may be willing to consider would be that you could try to sell the home for whatever you can get, and they would be willing to take what's called a short sale. So they'll take however much you can sell it for, they'll take and they'll write off the rest of that loan. You could also try something called a deed in lieu, where you just, you know, basically give them the keys and write over the deed to them, and they forgive the debt. So those are some options.
Okay.
You know, I think you could also try to find another renter, you know, but eventually probably you want to try to sell this. And I don't think there's any signal that the housing market's going to rebound, you know, dramatically in the next year or so.
Okay.
All right. So those are some options. And thank you very much for calling, Abby. And Michael, thank you. It's been a pleasure. Will you come back and be with us?
Absolutely.
Again?
Thanks for everybody.
Love to have you back. Michael Collins, Extension Family Living Consumer Economics Specialist and Assistant Professor in the UW-Madison School of Human Ecology. And your blog. We didn't even talk about that. Tell us about your blog just briefly.
Yeah, I created it with some colleagues in Extension to really just get the word out about various issues that people are facing today. So it's fyi.uwex.edu/toughtimes. And it's a compilation of materials that Extension educators around Wisconsin have used on a lot of the topics we've talked about today, you know, how to deal with a foreclosure, how to save, how to deal with credit companies, those kinds of things. So hopefully it's useful.
fyi.uwex.edu/toughtimes.
That's right.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
Michael Collins, we'll have him back, and we will do this again with him and talk some more with him. Sorry we didn't get to everybody. But we're going to put ourselves into the holiday mood a little bit here, I think, and at least the holiday grilling mood with our grilling buddies coming up next year on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.